Number one then, and number one now.
What is up, everybody, all you big Farm Status listeners out there? This is episode 13 of Farm Status. That's right, lucky number 13. We made it to 13. We are a couple of days late here. Chris has been gone, is busy doing stuff, so we put it off a couple of days, hoping he'd come back. Unfortunately, he isn't here, but it's all right, because you still have me. I'm Josh, of course. Nice to be with everybody out there again. And I have two co-hosts. One of them you may recognize, Trevor. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing wonderfully.
Wonderfully, huh?
Yes, I'm just going to go with it.
Right on. And then a guest host today, if anybody is familiar with the Rift forums or with Warrior Theory Crafting, I can say it, I swear, you will know him. He is Intrinsic from the Guild Kinetic, a Guardian friend of ours here. Intrinsic, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad to be here with you guys.
Awesome. So give all of our listeners out there a little bit of maybe history. When did you start playing Rift? And I know that you main a warrior, but what made you chose a warrior?
Well, I started playing back in Head Start. I was actually playing WoW. I was getting tired of it. One of my friends told me about this new game, this new MMO with high-tech graphics or whatever. So I checked it out, liked it, and pre-ordered. I chose a warrior because at the time I was playing a cleric just to heal. That's what I did in WoW. And I wanted a tank because they were in high demand all the time back before LFG, when you actually had to make groups. So I wanted a tank and a healer so I could, you know, play whenever I was on. And that's the main reason. So I could double dip into my into the dungeons.
And then you just kind of found that warriors were a lot fun and just kept rolling with them?
Well, I actually made the warrior on Fayblight. I used to be on Seastone with my cleric, and I actually started liking the Fayblight community a lot more, because, aka, I didn't get, you know, farmed out in open world, because Seastone's open world PvP is vicious, and just the community, just the people that played on that server, and I started making friends, and I stayed there, and made my warrior my main until character transfers, but to this day is still my main.
Good deal, good deal. So there, Trevor and Intrinsic have both been playing since Head Start. I'm like the fat kid on the playground being picked last. I didn't start till way after you guys.
Yeah, I think the last two betas, and then I pre-ordered and got into the Head Start.
Yeah, I was beta 6, and then I played beta 7 a little bit.
Good deal. A couple little kind of public service announcements here. As of last week, the beginning of April, we are now partnered with Rift XAM and the whole XAM network of fan sites over at rift.xam.com. You can find an up-to-date database full of all the loot, of all the quest walkthroughs, rare mobs, whatever it is. They have the most up-to-date planar attunement and soul tree calculator, so make sure you head on over there, rift.xam.com, see what they have to offer. Make sure, if you're really into it, to upload your own discovery logs over there and help out the entire Rift community. The second thing is if you would like to, obviously you don't have to, if you would like to donate to us here at Farm Status, we now have a link on the Podomatic page. You don't have to donate, obviously. Every little cent counts to help make Farm Status a bigger, better show. It's full of just more features that everybody likes to listen to out there. And if you donate $2 or more, you can get a little blurb on our show once a week for as long as you donate $2 or more. And it doesn't matter what it is. If you want a guild recruitment message, a shout-out to friends, colleagues, co-raiders, whatever you want. So if you donate more than $2 or $2 on that, $2 or more, there we go, so I'm looking for, you can get a little blurb on Farm Status, and all of our listeners and all of your friends out there can listen to it. Awesome. All right, so now that those are out of the way, guys, it's been another slow week in Rift. I know that we all three of us have been on the PTS kind of hashing some things out before 1.8 drops. But over on the live servers, what have you guys been doing this last week in Rift?
I'm still farming out those PAs, trying to gather up those inscribed source stones for whenever Infernal Dawn finally hits. I just hit over 200, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lot for me. I'm proud of myself. Pat on the back. Other than that, I have actually just started reworking my itemization on my for my tank set, because I found out through some mishaps of my own that I am actually way over the dodge cap. So I've been working on that, trying to get my my mitigation and my parry up a little bit higher so that I can be a better tank. I don't know that's how impossible or how possible that is, but I'm working on it.
And I have been farming inscribed, getting ready to make two sigils for ID. Other than that, I've been on the PTS a lot, testing different builds, getting them ready for ID. So I'm, you know, good to go day one. And of course, going over what we're going, how we're going to approach it with the guild leader and the other officers, and just making sure that the whole guild is, you know, in good spirits and ready to go.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. I know everybody that I know, whether it's in game, whether they just cover MMOs in general, seems like everybody is definitely looking forward to 1.8, and more specifically Infernal Dawn.
Right.
Which kind of nicely folds us right into our first news topic. It may not be new news, but we're going to cover it here on Farm Status. About 3 weeks ago, Tryon and the Rift team at Tryon released the Infernal Dawn concept art. And oh my god, it is absolutely beautiful, right?
Yeah, it's to date, I think the best art they've come up with. I mean, we all know Hammernail looked really good. It was awesome. I know Chris thinks so. It's so gloomy and gray. I like Hammernail. I think it looks great. And then I was, you know, like you said, they released the concept art for this. And ever since I saw that, I mean, I've just been chomping at the bit waiting for ID. I mean, the armor sets, just the boss models, it just looks amazing.
Yeah, I like the way it looks. I like the way that the weapons came out. I know that there's been talk about some of the armor sets not being the best on the forums, but I think it's still going to end up growing on everyone. It was the same way with me with HK. The colors weren't too good on the armor pieces themselves, but it once it makes it on live and you get it, you can dye it, make it your own, and people are going to grow to like it.
For sure, and I know that all three of us have been on the PTS. And luckily, I know that myself, Trevor, and Intrinsic over there, we all got some of the new pieces, actually, to actually try out, to kind of compare some of their different stats, the different aesthetics of it. So after seeing the new armor sets, and this is purely on aesthetics, guys, what's the best-looking new full 7-piece armor set coming out with ID?
Rogue, hands down.
This will be biased, but it's gotta be Warrior.
No way! I totally look like the guy from Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, like I definitely think that rogues look really good. Clerics, the helmet, and I've said this to Trevor a bunch. I can't help but think I look like a freaking goat with that stupid helmet on, and the two little curly horns that are coming out the back. Like really.
Yeah, but at least I look like I could actually eat your face off, not like some assassin that's going to be all gentle about the way I kill you.
Oh, that's if you can find me, sir.
The one that I personally didn't like was the mage, right? Mainly because of the helmet. And if you get a chance to go over onto the PTS or you look at some of the different concept art, it seriously looks like a giant dunce cap, really. It's a giant 2-foot tall dunce cap, just saying, look at me, I'm retarded.
Yeah, it looks like they're definitely trying to break away from the whole robe and wizard hat thing, which I don't know how people are going to take that. I don't know how they're going to like it. And I personally, to be honest, when I first saw this set, this was back, they had just released it, and they hadn't put any of the like the titles on it that signified it was, you know, leather set, cloth set, et cetera, et cetera. And when I first saw the mage set, I assumed that was going to be the rogue set, because it looks to me more, you know, sort of I guess, melee combat oriented. You know, it doesn't look very clothy to me, whereas the Rogue set had more, you know, sort of the layers, you know, the things that you would typically see with the cloth armor set, which I'm not complaining because I love the actual Rogue set the way it is. It looks awesome. But I was surprised that that's the Mage set, because it's like shorts and like a weird top, and there's like all these spines and things all over it.
Yeah, it looks like a corrupted mage from like one of the early Final Fantasy games. It's a mix of a lot of things and doesn't actually work.
Yeah, really, really weird. As far as my favorite new class armor set, I'm gonna also have to go with the warrior. There's a lot of different kind of cracks, and there's a lot of sharp edges, and there's a lot of little jabby pointy things, and I think that, like what Intrinsic said earlier, people are going to start kind of dyeing it and adding in different pieces, and it's going to look pretty freaking awesome.
You're going to be walking around like a giant porcupine.
Welcome to the dark side.
All right, and so along with all the new armor sets, there are also a bunch of new weapons, and all the weapons, I think, are the best looking weapons in the game to date, especially the new Warrior Two-Hander, which looks absolutely stunning.
Grim Reaper all the way, right? I mean, some of the weapons in ID, like, I recently got a Kraken Spine from Achilleos. It's basically a Del Spear of the Beast with a different skin on it and watery effects at the blade. Although that scythe is not my favorite weapon, if you're asking my favorite looking, the best looking weapon in my opinion is, it's a mage sword with like the eye in the middle of it.
Yeah, that thing does look pretty sweet. It's like the one that has the two pieces, and there's like the weird like void in the center of it that's kind of holding it together. Yes. Yeah, that is pretty awesome. But I don't know, I still like that scythe. It's I think it's called the Burning Revelation, and that thing is just, you look at it and it's just like, you know it's gonna hurt when they hit you with it. Like, I mean, you could put that in a mage's hands and let them swing it, and it's gonna hurt I'm just gonna say it's gonna hurt a lot. And you can tell they put a lot of thought into the designs for the weapons. Even like the little daggers that don't really stand out, the particle effects and stuff on them, they look really good. But when I saw that scythe, I almost wanted to reroll as a warrior.
They're still not too late, dude.
I just can't give up on the rogue, man. It's just too much fun.
Now, granted, these are all relic weapons, which are going to drop off. Obviously, the big dragon, big winged crazy creatures at the end of Infernal Dawn. But I think it's actually a really good idea to make all of these relic weapons have a really, really cool and unique look to them. And that way, when you're out in the world questing, grinding, or just AFKing in Meridian, you can actually kind of look at who has completed Infernal Dawn by whatever weapons they happen to have slung across their back, you know, and it kind of gives that person who does have the relic, you know, like a little bit of a self-esteem, right? Like, I've worked hard for this, and now I have this badass looking weapon on my back now, you know?
Yeah, it's like a quick plus one to your epeen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good thing.
It's like Chris said, you get it, and then you immediately go to Meridian or, you know, the Sanctum and just stand in town and be like, yeah, look at this. It's me.
Slash flex for like 2 hours.
It's like, I'm sparkling. I'm crackling. I got my embers. What's up?
Exactly.
Yeah, I really like that they're putting a lot more. It seems like they're putting a lot more emphasis on the art design for the gear, because it is an aesthetic thing, but at the same time, I think silhouette value adds a lot to the game. Like, you know, you put a lot of hard work into killing these bosses, and you want to sort of, you know, feel proud of, you want to, I don't want to say you want to brag about it, but you kind of do. You kind of want to, you know, like, you want people to notice, you know, that you've put in the time and the effort to do this, and you progress to X boss of, you know, the latest raid instance. And when you have really really good looking armor and weapons that's like this, you just kind of glance at people and you can immediately tell, okay, you know, like you said, they've been to this instance and they've obviously at least been this far into it. And it's like a status symbol, you know, as soon as you look at someone, and that's really good.
Yeah, it's like the Rolex or the Ferrari of, you know, the real world.
Yeah, basically.
All right, so moving on past that, and once again, if you guys get a chance or haven't yet seen the new Infernal Dawn concept art or been on the PTS and seen it on your character in live or seen someone else run around with it, make sure to actually go check it out. There are links in every major MMO website tracker, including at riftgame.com. Go check it out. They are absolutely gorgeous, and make sure to give the art developer dudes there at Tryon a little plus one love action. All right, guys, we're going to kind of switch into something a little bit more serious, and it's definitely caught the attention of a lot of the more serious raiders in the game. Because basically, once 1.8 drops and you complete a random expert dungeon, you are going to have.
We're going to talk about Falseblade. My bad.
Yeah, not yet.
LOL.
Once you complete your random expert dungeon, you will then have the option of either two Greater Marks of Ascension or one of the new Infernal Marks of Ascension. I mean, guys, it took, what, 3 months, 4 months for them to finally implement a one Greater Mark of Ascension into the rewards at the end. And now, as soon as Infernal Dawn opens up, you're going to have the option of getting one Infernal Mark and start on that whole gear progression path. Is this too soon? Should they have waited 2 months, 3 months down the road before they start letting every single person who completes a random expert dungeon start grabbing all these Infernal Marks of Ascension?
Here's my theory. When I was thinking about this, I feel like what they're probably trying to do is get people into the new content a little bit faster than they did with Hammernail. Because, I mean, if you look at Hammernail, they started nerfing it really heavily towards the end there, and I assume it's because they want more people to be able to see the dungeon as well as catch them up to the ID level. And I can understand why they would want to do that considering they put a lot of work into these dungeons and they want the maximum or the most, you know, amount of people to see it as possibly can. That's my theory. And also I would not say it's too soon, because if you consider how long it's going to take someone to actually get just one piece with just running the daily expert or whatever, I mean, I think the lowest piece is what, still 50? So that's over a month just to get just one piece, which is like the belt or the gloves, which is not even, you know, like that big of an upgrade for most people. So I wouldn't say that it's too soon. I think they're probably actually on a pretty good track here.
The thing about the daily dungeon reward doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that you add up those 7 daily ones for the week, then you add up the weekly. You can get one from the 20-man weekly and a 10-man weekly. You add those up, and that alone, starting ID day one, is going to be more than most guilds are going to get from actually raiding an ID. Of course, we haven't been in there yet, so we don't know where the mini bosses are. Let's assume the mini bosses are behind the first bosses in each wing. So you got to down 3 bosses to get 2 mini bosses. It's still going to be a lot of marks for not raiding ID at all. So people are going to get rewarded for not doing the content that it's meant for. And that's a problem. Is it good for the game that they're adding it this soon, getting new raiders in there sooner with that gear sooner? They might be bad raiders or good raiders. You don't know, but that's what they got to gamble with. And overall, I think in the greater scheme of things, it's a good thing for the game, but it's definitely going to put a bad taste in the mouth of the people that actually work for that gear and that spend hours and hours basically wiping for weeks and weeks, because not everyone is voodoo and maximation. Not everyone's going to clear the place in 2 months.
One thing to note there, while I do agree with you 100%, there at least is the fact that, at least in my experience with my guild in particular, the content, that's what you said, the weekly raid or whatever, say it's ROS or GSP, like typically we can clear those within 30 to 45 minutes, like the whole raid. So we usually do them both, GSP and ROS within one night, and then we sometimes, a lot of times, we'll do like half of Hammernail and then go and clear those just with the few stragglers that we have online after the main raid. So at least there is that where you don't have to devote a whole week to doing the weekly. Most people can probably do it within one night.
Yeah, that's true.
And especially because, I mean, I was in a Pug GSP this last Tuesday, and even in a Pug GSP with people bringing in alts that are still in blue gear, I mean, I think we finished a GSP in not even an hour. It was like 50 minutes, 55 minutes, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
they're
I'm sorry. On one hand, you're gonna have, you could possibly end up with a lot of really bad players that have full ID gear in a few months, or you could end up with really amazing players with full ID gear and people reap the benefits, like guilds that are recruiting. It's gonna create a bigger pool of recruitment. So we just gotta wait and see. I think personally, it's too soon because I want to see people work for that, and I want to see the people that are wearing that gear that actually earned it the hard way, not the easy way. But that's just me.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, this is good, and they shouldn't wait to release the ability to get an Infernal Mark of Ascension from dailies or from the weekly raid as long as they waited to release the greater marks of Ascension. But I don't know. I mean, let all the actual ID guilds get in there for, I mean, it doesn't even have to be that long, 6 months, 7 months, enough to get a couple pieces of gear, right? And then release the one Infernal Mark of Ascension for an expert or whatever it is. It's like what Intrinsic said, that way you can kind of tell who's in a serious guild and who's serious about getting deep into ID before all the more kind of casual weekend players that log in, do all seven of their experts, and then all of a sudden they are, almost what, that's one tenth of their way to getting a piece of gear.
And by 6 or 7 months, I assume you mean 6 or 7 weeks. I mean, I don't anticipate it taking 6 or 7 months to get one or two pieces of ID gear.
Oh, right. No. Yeah.
Yeah, 6 or 7 months to get like a couple of relics from the last bosses. But I just want to, I think I was on the PTS a few minutes before we started this, and I think that they actually increased the prices of the gear to kind of, I guess, to waver the fact that it's going to be easier to get marks. I think that the lowest price right now is 80. I'm not 100% sure. Last time I saw the gear vendor, it was that much. So at least there's one that positive thing.
Yeah, it's I'm glad you actually said that because I'm looking at it right now, and it goes from starts off at 80, and it goes up to 120, and then to 150. Yeah,
Okay,
I didn't even notice that.
so that's 2.5 months of just running just your dailies before you can get your first piece.
Yeah, I don't think that's too bad.
Yeah, that's okay. Now with that information known, I recant my last statement, and I can do that because I host farm status.
Well, I'm an elitist, so I'm gonna stand by my statement. I don't want anyone that's not raiding to get gear from that, but I'll put on the flame suit and deal with it later.
Yeah, you can send all your hate mail to Intrinsic
That's right.
at gmail.com.
Hey, bam, look at that. All right, guys, we're gonna switch over real quick. It's gonna hit on the cleric healing changes in PvP. We've addressed them mainly myself and Chris over the last month or so now. But Zinbic, who is the cleric developer, he basically kind of posted a recap of what they are changing. I'm just gonna read through these really quick. Soothing Stream is gonna heal 60% of its normal amount in PvP. Healing Flood is going to heal 50% of its normal amount in PvP. Healing Spray is going to heal 70% of its normal amount in PvP. And Overflow is going to heal 25% of its normal amount in PvP. Guys, looking at these numbers, I mean, those are some pretty hefty nerfs overall to healing in PvP. Each of you guys has a cleric. Is this going to spell the end of a pure healer, especially stacking wardens in a PvP warfront environment?
I guess I'll go first. When I do run my cleric, I do have a warden spec I use for HK and PvP, and yeah, it's definitely going to make me rethink that. I'll probably just end up using my hybrid. You know, it's got like Justicar and some other specs. It's some other souls in it. It's definitely not a pure healer, like a hard cast healer, like, you know, that does restorative flame or healing invocation or any warden spells. So it's definitely going to make me switch to that. And that spec has a lot of mitigation to go along with it, so it's going to make me more survivable. It's definitely going to make it easier to kill people in PvP. I mean, pocket healers are not going to be as, you know, as strong as they were before. So it might make it more fun, but it might also piss people off that are used to just walk. They're used to being, you know, walking gods in PvP because they got a warden or two on them, you know, stacking Soothing Stream over and over again.
And what this kind of reminds me of is, like, you know, late 18th century, mid 19th century, you know, American Civil War, Napoleonic battles, where you just have the Guardians and the Defiants line up in the middle of the Codex and just shoot each other, and then whoever is the last man standing wins, right? Because there is going to be no pocket healers, like you said. Healing Flood, Healing Spray, a lot of the big AoE heals are just going to be just nerfed into the ground. You know, like, there's not going to be the need for that 51 Warden to start spamming just all their big AoE heals if it's just going to get nerfed into the ground. And it essentially, you know, it's really kind of demoralizing when you see a hot tick for 100, 200, when you're used to seeing them tick for 700 or 800.
Yeah, I think it's going to get to a point where people are going to have to rethink how they approach battles, which I think is smart. I think people are too, if you want to use the word willy-nilly about how they approach PvP, they just charge in there and worry about how the hell you're going to survive later. And it's a good thing and a bad thing because I'm a warrior. I depend on those damn healers to heal me. I have almost no survivability unless I run a sword and board spec. With, you know, a 4-piece DPS crystal, I can do a lot of damage, but I'm really squishy. And if I run a really survivable spec, I can kill nothing. So it's a two-sided sword, if you want to say.
I wonder if maybe they're just... I mean, obviously this is a balance change, but part of me wonders if maybe they're trying to speed up PvP combat, you know, in the sense that you don't have these big clusters of people that are fighting, like, in the middle of a, say, I don't know, Whitefall Steps, and then you have, you know, two or three healers that are standing on each side, you know, behind the melee or behind the mages or whatever, you know, that are just keeping everyone up. I wonder if maybe they're just trying to make it so that, like you said, people have to be more careful about what souls they choose to go with and not just, you know, go into combat arms flailing and just, you know, rely on their hots to keep them alive.
Yeah, because as it is, at least the way I approach PvP when I play, I only play with a friend because I find solo PvP queuing boring. I just go after the healers first and then you go after the DPS.
And arms flailing?
Yeah, pretty much. I hope that someone's healing me, and I go after the healers first. Now, with this change, you can actually go after the DPS first, go after that first line, and then take care of the little weaklings in the back.
Not to interrupt too much, but I think this is also going to see the rise of a lot of Ikar-based clerics healing just purely from reparation heals. You know, I mean, we've already seen Ikar's take over healing, not just raid healing, but also in certain cases main tank healing in all the 20-man raids and all the 10-man raids. And I think we're also going to see it here where Ikars are going to be the kind of go-to healers in a PvP environment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know of a lot of, you know, high-end clerics that's what they run. Off the top of my head, a cleric, a very famous cleric from Maximation runs an Ikar build. And they do very, very well.
All right, and that is it for the news here in episode 13. If you've got something you'd like to hear on the show, whether it's in regards to the Infernal Dawn concept art, some of the expert dungeons now dropping two Greater Marks and one Infernal Mark of Ascension. Or if you have something to comment about the cleric healing changes in PvP, especially for the Warden Soul, feel free to shoot us an email. You can reach us at farmstatuspodcast@gmail.com. And yes, I said shoot. Or you can leave us a text or a voicemail. Our number is 917-830-RIFT, 917-830-7438. Going to shift around here into some of the Infernal Dawn gear itemizations. Like I said before, myself, Trevor, and Intrinsic have all been on the PTS looking at some of this different gear, what their stats are, comparing them to HK gear, and just the whole nine yards. We're going to start off here with our guest host, Intrinsic, who has Warriors covered and covered well. So, Intrinsic, what are some of the main changes Warriors are going to be looking at as far as gear in 1.8 and Infernal Dawn Mark and Relic gear?
The first big change is that right now on Live, a lot of Warriors have hybrid plate and leather sets, mainly for the fact that some of the leather pieces actually have more AP and crit than the plate pieces. So this new set of ID gear is itemizing a lot better. It's very AP heavy, has some crit to go with it, but at the rate that we are right now with all the DPS essences and runes and this and that, it's once you have a full set of gear, you'll have no problem reaching the crit cap, and you'll have tons and tons of AP. For example, I'm looking at my between epic and relic gear and ID, and this is compared to my set in on Live right now. I'll be losing with full epic ID. I'll be losing 195 crit, which is a lot, but nothing you know that you can't make up with runes and a sigil. And I'm gaining 138 and a half AP, and with relic I'm gaining almost 200 AP and losing 286 crit. I can get that, and I did a test on my, I copied my character to PTS. I got full relic ID gear, you know, the ID, rings, bow, pretty much everything that had, plus a lot of strength and a lot of AP, and I got a full crit sigil, full crit runes, and a plus 35 crit rune to my two-hander, and I was at 1030 crit, and actually a little bit over 1400 AP. And then I have a Golem Inductor. Almost every high-end warrior has a Golem Inductor. You're looking at almost 1600 AP with, you know, unbuffed crit cap. So with 1030 crit, you'll be well over 1187 crit, which is what you want to be at with raid buffs. So once everything's said and done and you got all that gear, which should take you, I mean, 2 or 3 months max to get, you'll be at a good place, and it's only going to get better for future tiers because they'll just have to itemize pretty much the same raise AP a little, almost the same crit values, and you'll be sitting, you know, next year with over 2k AP easily and be able to, and it'll be a lot easier for the devs, it'll be a lot easier for the itemizers to, you know, coordinate and not overpower, you know, specs or gear or whatever. So you'll be losing a lot of crit. If you go on PTS right now, pick up the bag, you'll say, oh my god, I have 1300 AP but 700 crit. Once you get a full sigil and runes, you'll be fine. Trust me. I just added up all the values, you'll be fine. So nothing to freak out about.
Let me interrupt you for just a second, Intrinsic. Do you think that all this new kind of gear rework, is it in the proper place it's supposed to be, considering the crazy amount of warrior changes, both to PA and then just to switching to AP instead of weapon DPS? I mean, is this a good place for warrior gear in 1.8?
In my opinion, yes. Once you start getting into tier 3 AP, you'll be picking up a lot more AP from whatever polearm swords or axe that you have. And then, you know, that range, the bow PAs. So whoever has, like, 1,000 PAs, you know, by mid-ID will be sitting on a lot of AP. But it's nothing that the other classes won't be able to match, especially, you know, high-end mages and rogues. There's a lot of specs that we can use that can match their DPS raid buff on PTS right now, which might be unfair because their best specs are either you stand still in DPS or you lose a ton of DPS, or situational specs like Bloodstalker. But to answer your question, yes, I do think so. It's better than the hybrid leather and plate that I have right now. I mean, it's killing my armor wearing all that leather, and my endurance too.
What about warrior tanking stuff? I don't really know if you tank a lot, but what kind of first general impressions do you see as far as warrior tanking?
Yeah, I did take a look at that too. And warrior, I mean, you gain a lot of block. You, as always, like on live, you have about twice the block that you do strength. So 25 strength, you'll have 50-ish block. You gain endurance, you gain dodge, but you're losing a lot of parry from both epic and relic gear sets, which is not a terrible thing. Up until you're about to reach the hard cap, without talents, you wanna still stack block. It's I know that Sidenhelm and a lot of tanks out there, including tanks in my guild, have done a lot of theory crafting around what's better. Stacking block after soft cap, or stacking, endurance or parry or dodge, and block always wins out. So I'm pretty happy with that. Like you were telling me earlier, you have on PTS, we have like 20k armor. I don't think we'll get near that, but still, we can't complain about where we're at right now with warrior tanking.
Good deal. All right. Trevor, you have the rogue, sir. What kind of changes are the rogues going to be looking at as far as switching from HK gear into 1.8 and into Infernal Dawn gear?
Just based on what I saw on the PTS, the tanking gear seems to be taking a step in the right direction. They have finally started itemizing for deflect, which is nice. The one thing that kind of concerned me that I saw on there is they don't seem to have any parry on at least the purple set, the basic epic set. I haven't looked at the relics pieces, but none of the tanking epic pieces have any parry on it, which I thought was really strange. I mean, they have strength, so you'll get it from the strength, but there's no just straight up parry stat. What they have done is, like I said, they added deflect, and they still have dexterity on there too. And that's I'm wondering how that's going to roll out. Like, if they're going to reduce the amount of deflect rating that we gain from dexterity, or if they're just going to take it away completely, or if they're just going to leave it to where it is, and then we'll see rogues having a deflect rating that's comparable to what warriors have in terms of block, because that would be really nice to see. That would definitely bring us closer to where we need to be in terms of making the rogues and the warrior tanks more on level, because right now, as we all know, they're not. As far as the DPS set goes, I didn't really do like a whole lot of theory crafting there, but obviously the stats have improved, so that's always good. And the it seems like they're really doing a lot to bring the what's the word I'm looking for, the weapons, yeah, there we go. They added, at least in the bags, they added a couple of different types of weapons. So it's good to see that they're sort of itemizing for all the different builds that people are using, such as marksmen, and then the various melee builds. And obviously you can use them, the melee weapons for your marksman set too, for their stat sticks. But yeah, it's looking pretty good. I was impressed.
Right on, right on. So there's rogues. Mages, unfortunately, I don't think either of us play a mage enough to actually be able to compare hammer nail stuff to ID stuff. Just from searching around some of the forums, then being in contact with a couple of the higher end mages that I personally know, mages are going to get a much bigger focus on spell power. They've been asking for that, because I know that a lot of in game, especially 5 or 6 reliced out mages, they're already past the spell crit cap. So this is definitely good for them, which means that they don't have to start worrying about diminishing returns or just a straight-up hard cap, that they're just no longer going to be able to benefit from. So mages are definitely going to let more focus on spell power. There are still going to be crit cap, though, so they are going to have to be adjusting runes, sigils, source machines, whatever it is, to try and get the most amount of spell power while still being right there at the crit cap. And from everything that I've seen, mages seem like they're in a pretty good situation as far as their ID gear sets, except for having the crappiest looking gear in ID.
But they have the best looking sword.
But they have the best looking weapon, yeah. Well, behind the warrior two-hander, though.
Yeah.
As far as clerics, clerics are... I don't even know where to start here. All right, deep breath, Josh. Basically, cleric DPS set and healing set has been rolled into one like it should have been, much like the 1.7 changes made, you know, all the focus to non-focus items, etc., etc. Now, clerics only have two sets of gear, a lot like warriors and rogues, and on their DPS slash heal set, we're gaining about 106 spell power, which is a pretty good amount, and that's totally awesome. However, we're losing roughly 120 spell crit, which I just don't understand, right? Like, obviously, since 1.5 hit in Serendipity and Overflow, and a lot and another Inquisitor spell crit-based talent, I totally forget what it's called. Since those are now replaced by just a flat percentage of it actually proccing, spell crit hasn't been important to, or as important to clerics, but still losing 120 crit, I don't know. I would like to see that number come down to maybe around the 80 mark, the 70 mark, while keeping the spell power the same. That would be more in line, especially for the 2-to-1 ratio between spell power and spell crit. As far as cleric tanks go, with the full rework of 1.8 in cleric tanks, which we've already covered a ton, me and Chris both, we're actually going to be decently close to the block hard cap. I know that we have Precept of Refuge that overwrites any kind of cap, I know, but I was sitting in full ID relic gear, self-buffed, and I was at 49% block. Add 20% to that, that's what, 69%? That's a pretty good amount to block, so cleric tanks might have something that they, you know, might have to start reworking some of their different runes, just like mages will, in order to not be at or above the block cap in order to be fully successful.
What's a cleric tank?
Yeah, right.
69 is a very good number, so I would like to be at that too.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not too bad, actually, so...
The one thing that you mentioned there that I liked, since I don't tank as a cleric because I'm not crazy, like you said, they rolled the DPS set and the healing set into one. Thank goodness. Because, I mean, I don't have a whole lot of experience with clerics. Obviously, it's my alt. But does anyone actually use the quote-unquote healing set for actually healing? I mean, I know I never did. I always just got the spell crit one.
Yeah, back before 1.7 kind of switched all that up, and these numbers aren't exact, so don't quote me. These are just from what I remember 2 months ago when 1.7 dropped. Going the full healing set compared to the DPS set, you only gain something like 40 spell power, and you ended up losing like 80 crit, 90 crit, which in my personal opinion, it isn't worth it, because while clerics are very dependent on spell power, obviously spell crit, you just can't have that be zero and still expect to be competitive DPS.
Right.
So I think this is really good, especially because after 1.7, or before 1.7, I'm sorry, is in Hammernel, clerics had three times the chance of getting loot, because we had three different drops compared to like a one drop for a mage or two drops for warriors and rogues. And so now warriors, rogues, clerics are only going to have two possible drops, and mages are still stuck with just their one.
Yeah, we saw a lot of that firsthand in Hammernel. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, same here. Now answer me this. You're the cleric main. Before I joined Kinetic, one of Kinetic's, you know, main healers had a full Dionys, you know, tier 1 raid set. And once I got in the guild and I saw her heal, blew my mind. Like, how a healer could heal that well with what was considered at the time, you know, the GIMP set, the lesser set, because everyone rocked Shyless because it had spell crit and comparable spell power. Do any top healing clerics, and have you seen any in Hammer Null gear with, you know, the spell power set over the spell crit one?
Yeah, and if you definitely want to get into the whole min-maxing thing, the spell power gloves are the way to go, and I think the boots as well. Don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, there are definitive ways where you can keep your either your 2-to-1 ratio or your 2.5-to-1 ratio or whatever it is between spell power and spell crit and min-max. You know, and spell power is king for clerics. But in my personal opinion, you got to have a little bit of spell crit, because there's nothing better than seeing a 9k healing invocation hit your tank, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my traditional thinking when I started healing as a purifier, spell power, because, you know, the shield scaled off of spell power. But then one of this one specific healer is in love with Sentinel, and Sentinel is all about those big healing invocations critting all the time, and she was no good without the spell crit. So it's kind of weird that they're rolling both sets into one. It's going to make it easier to itemize the dungeon, but at the same time, there's not that much choice, especially when you have two healing trees that differ in what they benefit from.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of been the whole argument. I mean, since I think it's been 1.5 that clerics lost some of their different crit-based procs. And like I've said before, spell power is still absolute king for anything, as for whether it's healing, DPSing, whatever. But, I mean, you still got to have a little bit of spell crit. It's just it's not worth it, in my personal opinion, to have to lose, say, 40 spell crit just to gain 60 spell power, in my personal opinion. That differs here and there, you know, but that's just my own personal opinion there.
Yeah, I mean, I have some friends, and I'll make it short. They're, you know, in Breaking Bad, so they have a lot of spell crit. They run this one specific spec, Jolting Bolt, on Sikron, and they do amazing, like, rogue-level numbers, and they stack all the crit they can get, so there's definitely a good side to having crit.
Yeah, the Joltizitor Jolting Bolt is by far the cleric's highest single-target spec at the moment, as far as it coming to fights that have no movement, very little target switching. Like, Sikron is perfect, I think. This last week in our Sikron, I was at 3.8, almost 3.9, and that's without any, or that's without a Bane of Madness. That's only with a 5-piece relic, you know. And I mean, you can easily see people with Bane, Abyssal Mark of Power, and then full 7 of 7 relic go 4,300, 4,400 without a problem. And that's one of those cases where Jolt from the Shaman Tree is the primary DPS, what's the word I'm looking for, skill, I guess, in the Jolting Bolt. It comes from Jolt, which is from crit, you know. So there are specs, obviously, that benefit from spell crit immensely. All right, and that's it as far as discussion stuff this week as well. Like I said, it's been a quiet week. Next week, you guys can look forward to having Chris back. Hip hip hooray. And that's 1 week less. You guys have to wait until Raidlock opens. And everybody who's going to be on Raidlock, whether as a guest or I know myself and Trevor and Chris, we are definitely looking forward to Raidlock. This week, really quick, we got a couple fan mails. Trevor, I'm going to let you read off the one from the comment that was posted on your YouTube channel. Go for it.
So this comes from, I believe it's pronounced Telemac. Again, like Josh said, it's from a YouTube channel, which you can find at youtube.com/valcavgaming. He or she says, I agree with your PvP assessment. As a guy, I guess, okay, as I guess it's he. As a guy who used to PvP a lot, I admit that this part of the game is very lacking. I am hoping the upcoming leaderboards will change something. Pylos and gears simply don't cut it, which is something that I had commented on in the last episode. And he's just remarking that he agrees with that. I'm glad, because maybe they will actually look into that other people see it the same way, that it's just, you know, just having something that appears above your head, which some people turn off, as Chris has mentioned in the last episode, it's just not enough. Like, you need more incentive for people to, A, get all the way to rank 40, and then, B, once they're there, continue to actually PvP. You know, they need a reason to stay. Yes, I know. I've been tooting that horn. I'm not even, like, a PvPer, but arenas, I'm telling you guys, it's fun.
Intrinsic, I know that you've listened to all of our episodes and you're a huge fan. Really quick, what's your take on arenas? Should they be in the game or not?
Once the classes get more balanced, definitely put it in. I would do it. I don't PvP much, but I would do arenas.
See?
The game is just too unbalanced right now.
Well, there you go, Tryon. So anybody out there listening, part of the Rift team, balance your game, balance your classes, put in arenas, profit.
A.K.A. Nerf Warriors. I'm just saying.
Warrior tanks, specifically.
Exactly. I mean, it has nothing to do with PvP, but just while you're on the, you know, while you're on the same page, just go ahead and take care of that.
Just nerf pyro doms will be okay.
All right, so we got a second mail, and this one here, it's decently long. I'm going to kind of break it down into two different parts here, and the second part is going to be a question to both Trevor and Intrinsic here. This one is from Daniel, who sent us an email. So to Daniel, thank you very, very much for your email. He says, "Hey guys, loving the podcast. It's a great way for me to keep my Rift addiction satisfied while at work. I also love that you go deep on mechanics and gameplay rather than just talking about what you ate for lunch that day. Finally, the fact that you have hosts who play each class is what makes your podcast stand out for me. Keep it up." So, Daniel, thank you so much for your kind words. Daniel keeps on going on here. He says, "I am coming from WoW and know that the community base and fan website support for a game that is 6 years old is hard to match, but I really miss websites like WoWhead and WoW Insider. I know that Rift.Zam.com, he knows about Rift.Zam.com, but it seems like the content is a little sparse, and certainly the comments and user support is nowhere close to WoWhead. I also use the Rift forums for guides, specs, etc. Seems like a good place to go, but I prefer sites like the Dolphi Cleric's website and BlueDots.org for guides. They seem to get closer to what WoW Insider does. My question, what community websites do you recommend for getting info on the game, such as builds, guides, quest info, and help, crafting, etc. Keep up the good work." So Daniel, thank you once again for your awesome email. We appreciate it very much and your awesome words. Intrinsic, Trevor, what do you guys think? Is there any specific websites you guys go to that help you perform a certain function or certain, you know, maybe it's something that you're looking for in game and you go to a certain website to find it?
To be perfectly honest, the one that I use the most is actually the Rift Zam website. Not to change the topic, but I actually started using the Rift Network, the Zam Network back when I was playing World of Warcraft and they had the WoWhead. So I just kind of migrated over to their Rift side of things. For things which is kind of related, things like lore information, which I know a lot of people aren't into, but they also have other information, but I think it's Talarapedia, the Rift Wiki. They actually have some good stuff there too. It's not fully like complete. There are some articles that just don't have anything written in them yet, but it is a good place to start.
Another one that I might throw out there, and it's a really, really popular one, but it's RiftJunkies.com and the whole Junkies network as far as every other MMO concerned. But Rift Junkies, they have a nice base as far as guides, decently up-to-date, as well as general editorials about how some of their staff over there at Rift Junkies feels about upcoming changes, just general gameplay, whatever it is. So make sure to head on over there at RiftJunkies.com.
This might sound cliche, but I use the Rift forums a lot. I'm on there a lot throughout the day on my phone, on a computer. basically whenever I can, and they've made a great effort to add in sections for things that he's talking about, quest guides, raid guides, builds. I mean, every warrior, every class section right now is a class guide section. And there's also, I think the other day they added dungeon sections, raid sections. So they're definitely inviting people to write these guides and keep it in the community instead of going off to third-party sites. But when I started playing Rift, I used Rift Junkies a lot. I mean, they've slowed down a lot in their content, but it's still relevant. And I use that, and I use Talarapedia for the lore. I'm a lore junkie like Trevor,
yeah.
Unfortunately. But yeah, I like the Rift forums a lot. As far as builds, I mean, I go on a PTS, or you know, I'll go on another guild's Mumble, and I'll look for some of my buddies, and we'll talk about certain specs and rotations. But to people that don't have that initiative or the time or whatever, I would just post a question on the Rift forums. If you get some kind of asinine answer saying, you know, go to this link, it's been here for ages, are you blind? Don't pay attention to it. Just go to it and learn a spec. Like, in, you know, 6 years from now, if Rift is still the game, you'll have sites like Wowhead and stuff. It's just right now the industry is trying to see where this game is going right now. And it seems to be growing, but people are still kind of skeptical about it, believe it or not, as much as we love it.
And you can always listen to farm status too. And if you have a specific question about a quest, about the best builds, the best just whatever it is, gear, I know that we got an email midweek actually from another person, and his name is blank, so I'm sorry. He sent us an email, and he was listening to episode 8, and he sent us an email, and he was basically asking, you know, hey, could you guys do a segment on what it takes to get to Hammernail from when you very first ding 50? And then quite literally 90 minutes later, he sent me a follow-up email that said, never mind, just listen to episode 9, right? So if you guys right? So if you guys have anything you want to hear here on the show, we are always open. We'll answer as many questions as we can. And if we don't know the answer immediately, to email you guys back, we'll get it up on the show. We will do our research and provide the most top-notch response to all your guys' questions. All right, fellas, that is episode 13. Any last words from you fine folks?
I guess I could give a shout-out or something.
Yeah, go for it, man.
I just want to give a shout-out to, of course, my guild Kinetic on Fablight. I cannot wait to raid ID with you guys. You guys are awesome. And a shout-out to some of my friends at Breaking Bads. Our Alt-HK, like, absolutely owns FaZe right now. And can't wait. Like, every week I can't wait to raid with you guys. But, yeah, just keep supporting the game, everyone, please. This game cannot survive without us, you know, passionate gamers, whether you're casual or hardcore raider.
And Intrinsic, you're going to be on Raidlock, right? Definitely have you penciled in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I cannot wait for ID and Raidlock.
Right on. That is Intrinsic. Trevor, any last words? And a little shout-out to Trevor. He is kind of my like listening board, both him and Chris. But Trevor and me talk constantly at work or whatever. So a big shout out to like Trevor. I'm constantly pestering him throughout the day. Like, hey, should we talk about this? Should we talk about that? And make sure and go check out his YouTube channel. He mentioned it earlier. It's at youtube.com/ValCavGaming. He has all kinds of awesome game videos, whether it's Rift, other game walkthroughs, talk over gaming. He does an excellent job over there.
Thanks, buddy.
Do I smell a bromance?
Oh, you know it.
Oh yeah. Wow, you totally made me lose my train of thought.
I have that effect sometimes.
I want to give props to the art team at Tryon and their Rift team. I've said it before already in this episode, but ID the art, the concept art, the instance, the armor, the weapons, it looks freaking amazing. Like, I mean, jaw on the floor when I saw Lathys, and I totally called it. Her texture, like, her skin totally moves. Like, it's completely dynamic. I so nailed that. I just want to pat myself on the back there. But, yeah, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And like you guys have been saying, I can't wait to get in there, try it out, kill me some dragons, get me some ID loot.
Yeah, this might sound kind of feminine, but when I saw that trailer, that 1.8 trailer, I thought I was going to cry. I got to be honest. That's how emotionally attached I am to raiding in this game, and it's exciting.
Yeah, and the lore buff in me was a little excited to finally actually get to see Lathys and Maleforge and their own instance with their new model. Well, I guess Maleforge's new model, but yeah, being, like I said, a lore buff, I can't wait to get in there and see what happens between the two of them. Like, if we're actually going to kill them, or, you know, they're somehow going to escape, or they're going to have little Maleforge Lathys babies. I mean, it's going to be awesome.
You can make a whole nother podcast about that, the lore in that place, I swear to God.
Yeah.
Right on. All right, guys, that's episode 13. A little bit unconventional, but you know us, you love us. If you've got something you'd like to share about the show, feel free to email us at farmstatuspodcast@gmail.com. We are on the Rift.xam network now, so head on over there. They have the most up-to-date planar attunement calculator, soul tree calculator, and the largest Rift database, including loot drops, quest help, and everything else you need to be your best. Make sure to check them out at Rift.xam.com and the whole xam.com community of fan sites. I've already mentioned the email. If you've got a voicemail or text, you can shoot us one, drop us one, give us one. It doesn't matter. Our number is 917-830-RIFT. It's 917-830-7438. You can follow us on Twitter at FarmStatusRIFT, and our show is on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. That's it, guys. Remember, be excellent to each other.